I'll read from Being with Children. This is a in the middle of a long section of Being with Children. I directed children in a performance of West Side Story. And it was a very choppy, choppy procedure to get there. Meanwhile, a crazed killer was on the loose on the Upper West Side. Charlie Chopoff, the popular name he had been given, had already mutilated and stabbed a few young boys not far away from PS 90. His face, or a police compilation sketch of it, was hung in every shop window. The kids in school jabbered about him constantly. The boys especially talked of him so often that he took on the shape of a perverse folk hero, half monster, half outlaw. They ran out of the backstage bathroom yelling, "Charlie Chopoff!" That damn killer had inconvenienced my life in more ways than one. Now I had to arrange for adult escorts to be provided every child in the evening performance. However, the Charlie Chopoff scare was only a mild shiver compared to the jitters of stage fright. A week before our opening, the terror began to surface. Short tempers masked cold feet. One fight after another broke out, like firecrackers in a line. Richard, whom I had been thinking all along was a good kid struggling along, misunderstood, the victim of bad press, Richard finally gave us a demonstration of his famous temper. One afternoon, with no provocation that I could see, he began smashing auditorium chairs. What stuck with me was the nihilistic swoon in his smile. No anger like the others, nothing but the clear joy of destruction that a tornado must feel. It took several adults to subdue him. Next, a fistfight broke out between Willie and Janice, who happened to be working the videotape camera. Some remarks passed between them, and Willie, his anger boiling over, took off after Janice. I had never seen such blows. They had to be held apart by their arms. Ziamara was the only one who could quiet her brother Willie. "It's not worth it, Junior. You'll get into trouble." I told my associate, Karen Hubert, to take Janice away. Karen, out of inexperience, escorted her to the door and let her go up the staircase herself. That was a mistake. Willie tore out after her, and everyone ran through the doors to see the fight. Let them go, I thought. I had no more stomach for rehearsing. It turned out I hated violence. I'd never really known that about myself. You think there's something thrilling and Dionysian about violence, and then two people start pounding each other's flesh, and it looks so crummy and shoddy. I told the pianist, Mrs. McGuire, that rehearsal was over. Roberta was very critical of me. "Damn, Philip, you shouldn't stop rehearsing just because of that. These kids are like everyone else. They run to see a fight. When the fight's over, they'll come back." "I don't care if they come back. Rehearsal's over because I'm discouraged. I can't work." I told a few who had stayed to go back to their classes. The pianist started to pack up the score, but hesitated. Roberto and his group refused to leave. Just as I did not humor their discouragements as an excuse to stop work, so they were not humoring mine. What occurred was very interesting. They started to practice Officer Krupke, and naturally I watched. Then most of the runaways came back, and we rehearsed A Boy Like That in America. It turned out to be a very productive morning. Picking up the pieces was the only pedagogical method I had to go on during this last hectic week when everything fell apart and came together again at least a dozen times. Certain children made it easier for me by unobtrusively assuming responsibility. Jerome, who was nobody's teacher's pet, saw to it that the gangs lined up in a V so as not to block each other from the audience. Britt let the Jets on stage with such verve that they were a little timid to go on without him. Virginia plugged up the holes in the America dance, clapping her hands, stamping her feet to keep the girls moving. And Roberto, not Lewis, who was too engrossed in his solo to pay attention, Roberto held the Sharks team together and Officer Krupke. Roberto had become involved in every aspect of the production. He found an old tire for the Sharks to roll back and forth on stage to give them something to do with their hands before Krupke enters. He and Jean located an aluminum cot to use as Maria's bed and as Tony's funeral bier in the last scene. He helped paint the scenery. He designed costumes. He had ideas about the lighting. If only he had stopped there. Roberto took to sitting on a chair facing the stage and cracking his belt for a whip. "I'm the director," he snarled. His excitement had a way of turning animalistic. Swinging his arms to look like a gorilla, he picked up the camera tripod with a threat of bashing Karen Hubert or me. "Put that down," Karen said with real annoyance. "I don't relate to being hit over the head with a tripod." "Roberto, you got to take a more delicate approach with women," I teased him. "Suppose you're on a date." "I don't want to go out on no dates. I just want to get down with a woman, and she better do what I tell her to." That was Roberto. As viable as he could be on the technical end, the next moment he would do something that made me wonder whether it was all worth it. He'd gotten into a particularly raw, nasty mood during a dress rehearsal, turning light switches off and on, fooling with the curtains, and disobeying orders ostentatiously. There was a strange situation brewing backstage between him and the girls that I didn't quite understand, but from time to time I heard a girl cry out, "Cut it out, Roberto!" I went behind the curtains and told him if he didn't stop bothering the girls, he would be dismissed from rehearsal. He seemed not to like hearing this. As soon as I had gone front stage and told Maureen to begin playing the music again, Roberto yelled out, "Philip is a faggot and he don't wear no underwear." For some reason, this random taunt got under my skin. "Like who you calling a faggot?" I ripped open the curtain to see him advancing on Dolores. "Get out." "I ain't leaving this auditorium." "You're leaving all right. Come on, you're through for today." "Gonna make me?" "I'm gonna make you. Get out." "I'm not leaving no matter what you do to me." "I'm not kidding with you, Roberto. Go." I started dragging him down the stairs. Everyone was watching us now. There comes a time, I thought with a lump in my throat, when you can't back down. I pushed him. He pushed me. I pushed him. He pushed me. I shoved him hard. Tears in his eyes. His hand went up to his neck. "You broke my locket." A sigh went through the cast. "He broke it. Oh, Roberto's going to tell his father." I sensed that popular sympathy had turned against me. "It was absurd, an accident." "You broke it and you're going to pay for it." A great childish blubber broke out of him. So different from the tough guy of a moment ago, I could only be relieved. He was crying like a baby. At last, he had a focus of outrage for all that frustration he had been feeling. "You better fix it," he said. Suddenly, he was no longer in big trouble. In fact, he had the upper hand. "I'll fix it, don't worry." "It's going to cost you $2. "I'm not worried about the $2. I almost smiled. "We'll get it fixed during lunch. Meanwhile, I want you to go out of the auditorium and go back to your class." He turned his face away to ignore me. I started escorting him by the elbow when he pulled away. "Don't you shove me." "I'm not shoving you. Move by yourself and I won't have to touch you." At the head of the aisle, I told him I wanted to speak to him in private for a moment. I was working up to an apology. "I don't want to talk to you," he said, and slammed the aluminum door going out. Just as well, I turned to face the cast, who were all on stage, waiting silently. I wondered what the pianist thought about me. I felt we had just undergone the most serious threat to the show since the beginning. By hitting him, I had committed a cardinal error. It would endanger all of us if his parents were to press charges. Looking into their faces, though, I saw they attached no such importance to it. They seemed to regard it as the nature of school life. The pianist was a little shocked. Not, it turned out, because I had pushed Roberto, but because he had dared to lay a hand on me. She had no trouble supporting my action, even if I did. We continued rehearsing. 10 minutes later, Roberto was back. He took a seat morosely in the first row. I preferred to ignore this infraction and go on with the scene. Maybe I was doing the wrong thing again by letting him disobey me. Consistency is all very nice, but how was I going to manufacture the self-righteousness to eject him again when I had expended all my anger? I did what I felt right. I let him stay. He jeered at the actors from time to time, not much. At the lunch bell, I asked Roberto to stay behind alone for a moment before going off with him to the jeweler's. I told him that I was sorry for breaking his locket and sorry if I'd hurt him. But it had been absolutely necessary that he leave the auditorium when I told him to. "You were really getting out of hand," I said. "How did you know I was doing anything wrong?" he objected. "You were fooling with the lights, you were bothering the girls. But did you see me?" Not only did I see you, Alberto, everyone was coming to me and saying that you were bothering them. And to be honest about it, I was angry when you called me a faggot. I really don't like it, you know. I'm human. I got my feelings, too. Roberto nodded. He seemed much more subdued and open to reason, with no witnesses around. We went to the jewelry store to get the link soldered. Willie was excited because he knew a Dominican jeweler who would do it for less. This guy knows my family, he said. Willie did all the talking in Spanish, and we were charged a mere $1.50. Roberto looked considerably relieved that he would not have to explain to his father how the locket got busted. In no time, he was confiding in me his plans for the weekend. We went into McDonald's and ordered some Big Macs, sat back, and had an easy lunch. Who would have guessed that an hour after the incident we would be on such good terms? Perhaps with a kid like Roberto, drawing the line is a sign that you care for him. Dolores told me later that Roberto had been coming out of the dressing room in the morning with his zipper open and his private parts showing. That was going pretty far. I began to understand why he kept asking, "But did you see me?" I'll stop here.